Well, hell yeah. Welcome to the Center for Indigenous Midwifery's podcast. Our mission is strengthening community by honoring, supporting, and reclaiming Indigenous midwifery care and culturally centered family support. For more information on our programming, visit indigenous-midwifery.org, find us on social media, or tune in for a live Zoom cast offered each month. Thank you so much for listening.
Hello, everyone. I want to start thanking you for being here today. Good afternoon from, right now I'm here in San Diego. I'm at my office here in Mission Valley, and this is Kumeyaay territory. And then I'm very happy to be here. And so it will be also good if you feel and you want to share in the chat, like so we can go over that later, from where are you listening, or where are you at right now. That will be good, that way we can know like all the different places are connecting right now. So I want to start again thanking you for being here today. When Marisa asked me to, be part of this or to present, I was like very excited. I feel like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I have always admired the work that that the Center for Indigenous Midwifery have been doing. And I think it's very important to continue doing this work. And I come here very humbly to share a little bit about my knowledge and this information that it was, it has been something that I learned through the years, and I have been little by little crafting and getting, more involved, and really it has been just working with all these women what have brought to me much more attention to other things, or more things that for me are important to share with you today. So when I decided to, about the topic, one of the things that that I have seen more frequent here, it has been like problems in the uterus, and in our perspective related to coldness in the uterus. So, and this is, can be something new for you, or you can be familiar. But the idea is that we're gonna go over this information, and then so I'm gonna just, right now start with my presentation. So just give me a second. I'm gonna go right here. And then
could you introduce yourself real quick?
Sorry. So my name is Metzli, and I'm childbirth educator, a traditional birth worker, and I'm a sobadora. I'm a mom, and I work, with women most of the time, with families too, and with babies sometimes. But that has been my work, for almost 20 years, or for basically since I'm 18 years old. I'm 38, so it's 20 years, but professionally maybe since I'm 22. So. But I'm gonna go over the presentation, because actually right there I'm gonna explain a little bit more about it. So again, this presentation is about coldness in the uterus. We call this frialdad en la matriz. So this is me. I'm Metzli. My name is Metzli Lopez Torres. I'm my name means moon in Nahuatl. And so I'm very related to the moon since birth, basically. And this has been not only, for my name, but also because I'm really, affected by the moon. My mom say that since I'm a little girl, she can see how I was changing based on if it was full moon or, things like that. I didn't know this until later in life. But for me, it's very significant that I'm, you know, that my name is actually that. And that's the reason why the business of my name is Luna Mama. So it was more easy to think about like Metzli Mama. It could be a little bit difficult for some people, the pronunciation of my name. But Luna is kind of a word that we share around the world. A lot of countries, they understand that Luna is the moon, right? So that's the reason why I choose that. But actually, I choose this name because it's my name. So that's my name. It's moon, or it means moon. And I'm a Mexican indigenous immigrant. I came here to the United States 9 years ago. And I just recently did all of these, like the DNA test and all of that, to look for the blood and all these, the genetic information right there. And I basically have what most Mexicans have right now, which is mostly indigenous. I also have some European blood and some black blood those are kind of, you know, the threads that they found. And it's very, in Mexico, after decolonization, this became the mix, most common mix among people. Right now we're called Mexicans, but most of us, we have these three bloodlines right there. And then, I come from the Mesoamerican territory. So I come from Veracruz, and this state, it has 12 indigenous groups. And then I come from the region where is the Nahuatl Totonaca indigenous people. They come from there, or they live there still. But right now, many of us, you know, due to colonization and, you know, all this process that we all know, we lost our language, most of us, but or what we say costumbres, or, you know, like the way that we understand the world and the way that we have our life is still very indigenous in many, many, many ways. So I want to stop saying that Mesoamerica is not all Mexico. So Mesoamerica starts from the center of the country of Mexico. So it could be, we will say, like the Purépecha territory, you know, like that all of those states, and it goes all the way down to Central America. So it's not only Mexico. So and this is important for me to explain, because what I'm going to talk right now is mostly shared in Mesoamerica, in all of these, not only in Mexico, but in Central America also. There is this idea of coldness the same way. And this is because before the colonization, all these big regions from the center of Mexico, the country, what is right now, it was like a mega region that shared. They were sharing their traditions, they were sharing their crafts, they were, you know, like it was like they migrate to all of these areas too, right? So people, Nahua people, they migrate to all the way to Honduras. And then, you know, like it's like a big, if we can think like a big river of, you know, like people that were moving up and down. And then even when the language could be different, but they share among them their knowledge. And that's the reason why many of us share many things. It's kind of very similar. For example, people that can come from, that they can be from Yucatan, which is the peninsula of Mexico, the last part of, you know, like the country. And that actually is Mayan people. They can share many things very similar to the people from Central Mexico, right? From the country. So, and it's because all this region was all the time interacting and sharing. So, and then there is a different region that, like the desert, right? The desert that is shared with the south of what now it is United States. So that's a different region. And the, so my knowledge, my tradition, my people, it doesn't come from the north of Mexico. It comes from the center to the south of Mexico. And that's my knowledge. So I want to just state this very clear, because sometimes when we're talking or thinking about indigenous, we tend to kind of think like all indigenous are the same. And we are, you know, like that we have the same traditions and things like that. And I think that's the reason why these type of sharings are so important, because we can find things that are similar among us, but also we can find things that are different, and because we also are different too, right? So we can, you know, the way that we our clothes, the way that we, the language, the way that we eat, the way that you know, things like that can be different even among this area. So then, so this is, you know, I wanted to just stop a little bit talking about from where it comes, from where I come from, and, you know, like all of this, because this is important, again, just to, if we're talking about indigenous groups, and, you know, if we identify also as indigenous, then we need to understand from where we come from and from where it comes, the knowledge that we have, right? So I just wanted to be clear about this. And then, and again, so this is something that is shared among, you know, like the knowledge that I have is a Mesoamerican knowledge that we will call it right now, although Mesoamerica is like more an academic you know, like term to talk about this mega region, but there was not exactly a name, because there were, like, you know, different empires. Even there were the Aztecs, and then there were like the Mayans in the south, and also there were the Purépecha territory, and, you know, there were like all of these different groups that they were right there sharing all of these. But again, we have these things that are similar. So so I just wanted to state that. So so I'm a mother, I'm a daughter, I'm a sister, I'm a partner, I'm a girlfriend. I you know, I am, I have all these different roles, and but also another thing about me is that I'm an anthropologist. So and that's the reason why I'm explaining all of this. So I have an academic background. And that means that part of, you know, has been very important for me. It has been researching about what I'm talking about, because, and all of this is because when I decided at 18, I was 17 years old, when I decided that I wanted to be a midwife. At that time, there was not a midwifery school in the town that I come from. And then there was only one school in San Miguel de Allende. And San Miguel de Allende is in a different state that is called Guanajuato. And that's very far from my state. So if I wanted to be like a midwife, like a professional midwife, we will say, I will have to live there. And then at that time I became a mother. And then I didn't want it to leave my child, because that was the only option. When I remember that I give them a call at that time, and I ask, hey, can I take my baby with me if I go to study there, to the school and all of that? And they told me that no, that most women, what they do is that they leave their children to become a midwife. So for me, that wasn't an option. I didn't plan it to leave my baby to become a midwife. So when I was like 18, that was my time to decide, you know, like kind of what I will do. I decided that the best that I could do was study and a different study something that will related in some way, approach me to the knowledge that I wanted, and I will do midwifery, traditional midwifery. So that will mean that I will learn from traditional midwives. I will not go to school, to a formal school, to become a midwife. I will learn from traditional midwives at the same time that I will do like kind of the academic thing, to have kind of this paper saying that I was, you know, something, because at that time and still today, traditional midwifery is still not very recognized in Mexico. So then I wanted to have like a paper that say that, you know, I study something that can give me like a background in something. And then that's the reason why I decided to do these two. And then, and that's the way that I learned to be, or to do the things that I do right now. So, in this process, well, you, traditional midwives and in Mexico, they are not only midwives. In the sense that it's understood here in the United States, I will say. They specialize in women's health and in that case in Mexico, it's about babies and it's about they become kind of curanderas. So this is, you know, healers. So they not only will support women while they're having when they're pregnant and, you know, during childbirth and postpartum, but they will also, for example, will take kids or men or elder people in case that they have some kind of disease. They will help them out too. So there, it's like the traditional midwifery in Mexico is very interesting because the role is very, very wide and is very important in their communities. So that means that they can be kind of a doctor of the community if among other traditional doctors in the community, for example, we will say el curandero or la curandera, you know, that could be another role also among all of these traditional healers is el huesero. So it's like, you know, the ones that they work with the bones. And then another one, even there is like a role, a traditional, we will say healer or doctor in this, you know, in this perspective of understanding doctors in a whole different way, that is the Western idea, which is, for example, los rezadores, you know, people that pray. So praying is a medicine too. And prayer, being a prayer is not only un rezador or rezadora, you heal people with that, right? Because you know there are very specific rituals for very specific diseases. But also these prayers, these rezos, they can be to ask for rain, or they can be for, you know, like, so this is actually a doctor also in the community, but also it has, again, other different roles in the community. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of more or less like that. So I have the privilege to work with traditional midwives, different ones in different parts of Veracruz. But I basically learned mostly from two that they were close to where I am from. One, she passed away during COVID. And then the other one, she's still alive. And then these are, you know, these were very different traditional midwives that were the one that she's still alive. She doesn't practice anymore, but she shared her knowledge. So she's still, you know, like trying to share about plants and about, you know, postpartum and all of this. And then the other midwife that I learned from, she didn't teach anybody. It was more like an apprentice where you just go talk with them. You tell them your intentions that you want to learn to be a midwife and they can take you in, but you basically are there helping. So you are just, you know, like helping from many different things, like from bringing the, you know, like the things that she may need to really support, you know, when she tells you to do it. So there is no like this thing of you need to pass ABC and, you know, like things like that. It's much more like organic and natural, and you know, it's really, you create a very deep relationship with these midwives too. And you love them, they love them too, they love you too, and then and you help them out, right? There is no economical pay for this, but what you do is you, or what I did in my case, is that I also help her to get some clients outside her community, because traditional midwifery, at least in my time when I was doing this, like, you know, more than 15 years ago, the pay for, you know, it was not monetary, or it was very little. It was like 800 pesos, 800 pesos. That's right now in dollars, like, like $50, $40, something like that. But they, you know, they get other things. So people bring them food, they bring them, you know, like a hen or eggs, or, you know, like things like that. And then also the other thing is that, so I help her to get clients outside of the community, clients that were looking, you know, for to have a different experience having their babies. I became their doula, and I take them to my own teacher so she can, you know, attend those births. And I, you know, and the agreement was that they will pay her $5,000 to $7,000. So that was like a, you know, a huge increase of money of what she could get from her regular clients, that community. I, you know, that was my way to kind of, you know, bring that income or help her in that way. So it was like the way that I learned and the way that I gave back. So it was kind of, you know, in this process. Many midwives, there are also sobadoras, or they know basics of sobadas. And then that's the reason why I got this knowledge. It is not because I went to a school to be a sobadora or because I learned from a specific sobadora. It's actually the sobadas that I did or that I know are the ones that I learned from midwifery. So there are very specific ones to work with, you know, most of the time with women, and then to work in the uterus and to work also with babies. So those were kind of my, you know, like the things that I learned and the things that I start doing here when I decide that I will, you know, share this knowledge here in the United States. So, and, you know, like part of my big thing, my work has been all this time because I'm Mexican, because I grew up in a very specific culture. Working with and for women and empower women in our gifts. So really, you know, return this power that women we need to understand ourselves, to understand our gifts, and to understand our medicine. So to me, this has been more also a part of this work that my teachers, they didn't do in the way that I'm doing. But in them, there was always this, you know, like they work a lot with women that they were going through so many things. And for me, it was just so important to continue, you know, like empower women in, you know, we can get out of difficult situations. We can, you know, with the support of our communities, our families, we can, you know, like really return to ourselves our value. Because I grew up in a society that women were seen as a second class citizens. And it's very hard for us as women grow up like that. So that's the reason why for me and my work is totally dedicated to work for and with women. And that's a big component of the work that I do. So, okay, so I'm gonna go to the next one. Okay, so before we begin with, you know, this was my presentation. Before we begin with all of this knowledge, I just want to ask you that, you know, for me, sharing this, it comes very deep from my heart. It's not just, you know, like something that is easy to share, because because it goes really deep on me. And because I feel like we need to always honor this knowledge that comes from very, very ancient time, that there is no books, there are not, really anything that you can access only, honestly, most of the time while you are working with all these healers. And I would just want to take a moment before, we start with all of this, just to, if you're listening, just to, take a deep breath and feel yourself, feel that, how is your heart doing? How is your body doing? If you need a time to drink some water or to go to the bathroom or something like that, just do it right now. Listen to your body. That's key. And really just to take the time to be centered, not only in our bodies, but to really understand that in our bodies, we have our soul and our spirit. And we are beings that when we are sharing, we are not sharing words, we are sharing energy. And that's what I'm sharing with you right now. And that I would love that you understand that what I'm about to give you is that. So I really hope that this goes well in your heart, that you can take these my words in a sweet way, because I'm gonna try to do it like that, but also in a way that you can reflect about your reality and about the things that are happening in your body or in other women's body while they're going to this process, and that we are here to help each other. So for me, that's key. As women, as sisterhood, we need to help each other because that's the only way that we are gonna continue in this reality. And that's something that I learned from my own teachers, from one of these maestras, una partera, one of these midwives. When it was very significant for me, when she was sharing her knowledge, one day she just said, you have to remember that whatever you do, you are gonna do for love to other women. And to me, that was like that, arrow that went directly to my heart and my soul. And I was like, yes, I mean, if I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do it for love. So and from there is that I'm sharing right now this with you. It comes from my heart. So I'm gonna try to explain this kind of in two different words and worlds. So one is the Western physical, part, but the other one is going to be the spiritual one, which for me is as important as the other one, because they are all the time like this. They balance each other. So the womb, the uterus, the matriz, como nosotros le decimos, as we call it, la matriz. It's an organ that is present in most female bodies. Some women, they are born with no uterus, which is very rare cases, but most of us, we have a uterus since we are born with this body, biological body. It is part of this reproductive system of females. It is the place where we grow our babies when we decide that we want to have babies and so our babies are going to grow right there. But for us also, it's an energetic point. So it's like this, it's like this biological part, but also is our energy. So in our understanding, in this traditional perspective of these midwives, and the way that I understand that myself is like, it's also energy. So it gives us this energy to basically guide us and to live in this world in a very specific way. So our womb it's a connection with the past and the future. So it's a connection with the past because, as many of you know, we are formed, this egg that was formed of what we, became this human that we are right now. It was in our, in our grandmother's body when she was pregnant with our own mother. So basically, we're talking about already three generations right there, and we are the third one that is connected right there. But if we go back to that, there are other three, another three, another three. So we come from a very, very, very long line. And those memories, they live right there. They live right there. That is called right now epigenetic, right? So we have those memories inside us. So that connects us to our past. And that's the reason why we can return there to the past too, when we learn to work with the womb in this way. But also it will connect us to the future in the case that we have children. Whatever is happening right now in our life and whatever is happening during our pregnancies is going to go also to that future, of our children. And if we have a daughter, then she's going to be, that she has this ex right there also. It's going to go like that for granddaughters. And, it's just going to go all the way like that too. So this is a direct connection with our female lineage. So these traditional midwives and these understand or we understand that this it's gonna connect us with all these female lineages. All these line that comes again from this past. But also our womb is our expression of, or is gonna help us to express our femininity. So is this energy, this feminine energy that we have, and that is right there in our womb. And then when we are working or when they're, is this energy that will give us kind of the sense of our own femininity and how we need to move in the world. And of course, is in this biological idea also a biological clock, right? So it's gonna give us like this when we're moving to one stage to another one. When we start our menstruation, then when we are become mothers, and then when we go to our perimenopause and menopause. Like all of these natural biological processes that happen right there because we have a womb, because we have ovaries. Because all this hormonal process that it happens right there. So, but also one of the things is that our womb is also our second heart, and many midwives, traditional midwives in Mexico, they believe, and I believe too. We believe that that our heart. That our womb is our second heart. And this is very powerful because when we are thinking or talking that we have problems in our womb, then for us, we are thinking and we are understanding that there are problems in our heart. So I just want that you sink with this for a little bit because it's very deep knowledge. It's very, very deep medicine. So we need to ask ourselves, how is my heart doing, right? How is my heart doing? How is your heart doing? It's okay? Are you having problems in your womb? Are you having all pain? Are you having irregular menstruations, fibroids? Are you having these, you know, like all of these? All of that is an expression from your heart. And of course, I'm not talking about this biological heart that we have right here. I'm talking about our emotional heart as women. So, so when we start understanding then that our womb and what happens in our womb is not just biological, it's really spiritual, you see? And in our perspective, in traditional Mexican medicine, we understand that our diseases, they have a spiritual, it's an spiritual imbalance. It comes from the spirit, but actually is the body the one that is gonna express or react to it. But actually it's most diseases, in our perspective, they come from the spiritual world. So if we have problems in our womb, that means we have a problem that is starting in our spirit. So for us, we need to start treating this problem, the womb, not in this Western idea of pills and removing and cutting and this and that, right? So we need to first start working with the spirit, you see? So then we can heal the physical part. Because if we try to just do the biological part, it's not gonna work. It's gonna return, or it can be even worse because we are not healing the spirit. So in our perspective, we need to work with these two at the same time if we want to heal the womb, but also it goes to many other parts or basically the whole body. So, okay. So I'm gonna go to the other one. So in traditional Mexican medicine, right now is it's what it was before the colonization, indigenous medicine. But then during the colonization and due to all these influences of, you know, what the Spaniards brought, with what, which was not only European, but also was all these African, and was like also you know, like from Asia, you know, like all of these different knowledge that, you know, it came also with them and starts, you know, through all these processes of, you know, syncretism. That's how that is called, right? Like this way that was very violent, but at the same time it was a way of the same indigenous people to cope with, you know, with these very overwhelming changes and reality that say, okay, so now, you know, from having all these gods and goddesses, we're just going to have ones. But then all these gods and these virgins, they became a little bit like, okay, now it's going to be Tlazolteo. Now it's going to be, you know, like it was like these kind of, when there were like rituals for Tlazolteo, or when there were rituals for Chalchihuatlicue, or when they were like all these goddesses, for example, what they did is basically they used the saints of the Catholic religion to kind of mix them with that and became something that is the Mexican thing. So, which is not totally Spaniard, European, but also is not totally indigenous. It's a mix of those two. So that is traditional Mexican medicine. That's the medicine that I practice. And that's the medicine that is most practiced in most all of these in Mexico, in you know, outside of the Western doctors and all of this. So so this is a set of, again, of practices, indigenous practices that were mixed with what it came after the colonization. So I think this is important to mention because some of many of the plants, many of the herbs, many of the things we use, they're not native. We use native plants, but also we use romero, we use rosemary, we use rue, we use, you know, all of these are very common, I will say, not only in Mexico, but all through Latin America. And those are not our herbs. Those are not our plants. They came with the during the colonization. But already right now, in the indigenous communities and in all of these traditional and Mexican medicine are part of our medicine right now. So some of the main points of this traditional Mexican medicine is that we understand that our health, being a healthy person, or to understand health, is going to be in three parts. This is going to have the body, is going to have the spirit, and it's going to have nature. So we need a balance between these three different spheres to have health. And, you know, I see the world this way. For me, it's not only, you know, something that I'm explaining to you right now. For me, is the way that I see the world. And for me, it's very clear why we have so many diseases right now. And this is for the disconnection that we have with our soul and with nature. Because Western medicine has just focused, and societies right now, they're just focused on the physical part. And they forget that actually we are part of nature, but and also that we have a spirit and nature has a spirit too. We all have a spirit and we are sharing all the time this energy. So then when we are just focused on the uterus, for example, as an organ, we then are missing a big part of, you know, this big picture of our health. And that's the reason why it's so hard to get healthy, right? So then these three spheres, again, are not separate. They are the same. I'm part of nature. Nature is part of me. We all have spirit. So all of these energies are moving together all the time. And that's the reason for us, you know, we know that what is happening right now to nature is what is affecting our health. And that's the reason why we have all these diseases too, because we are, you know, we are overusing, overexploding, we are doing all of this to nature, but we are nature. So that's the reason why we are like this, we are suffering all these diseases, right? So it's just, everything is connected. So, so one of the things that are, that are important, that is part of this component of traditional Mexican medicine, is a dualism. So in our perspective, there are two energies that they're moving all the time together. And this energy is the masculine and the feminine. And in between these two, there is a big, you know, rainbow of things, but there are two main ones. So we see the world all the time with these two energies, masculine and feminine. We basically divide the world like in that way, and there needs to be a balance. So for example, I'm a woman. I have my female energy is stronger, but I also have a male energy that is not that strong, right? So that's the reason, you know, for some people, we can see that they can have more other energy that is more masculine and their feminine is, you know, lower and things like that. So it just, it kind of is something that we don't choose. It's something that is just gifted when we're born. And that's the way that we understand. So it's just like these energies that they're moving all the time and that they're complementing each other. So, and when we are, you know, like, it's basically this balance also, it's important to have this balance to understand ourselves and to understand what's happening in us. So I'm going to go to the next one. So just a little bit about explaining more about these two this dualism as that we see the world all the time, right? So this dualism, this masculine and feminine, also it goes in many, many, many layers. So for example, we understand then there is the frío that we say cold and the caliente, which is the warm, right? So these two energies, frío y caliente, cold and warm, they work together too. And they balance each other. They need to be balanced in the world and in us to have health. So for example, we understand that the moon is cold. The moon is an entity that for us is cold. And the sun is warm, right? So we can just, in a logic thing, we can think that if we are outside, and if we feel like the moon, unless we live maybe in a very tropical area, but most of the time when there is the moon, it's cold. And when there is the sun, it's warm, right? So it's a little bit in that logic, right? So, but also this happens in our body. So for example, women, physically, we are cold. So you can ask yourself the temperature of your hands, the temperature of your feet, the temperature of your body. Most of the time, women, we tend to run cold. And men, they are warm. So for some of you that have a partner that is a male, you may see that most of the time they're warm. And we go with them and we sleep with them when we're like, oh, you know, warm me up, my hands, my feet, you know, like all of these things, because they're warm, right? And we're cold. But in the emotional aspect, again, these balances, right? We're talking all the time about balances here. It's like these energies that are all the time complementing each other. But men, emotionally, they're more cold, right? They have a little bit more hard to time to connect, to empathic, to all of these, because they're built different in our perspective for this energy that these have, this masculine energy that makes them be like this. And for us, then for women, we are more warm, right? So we're more mothers, more warming, more ventaca, mijita, you know, more like in this loving, you know, empathic, more in this. So emotionally, that's right. So that's our balance. We're cold most of the time in our body, but we are warm in our emotions. And with the men is the other one, right? So it just, that's the balance. In this thing, there is also wet, you know, cold, wet, it's cold, so wetness. So if we think about, for example, our vagina, it's this, there is this moisture, there is this wetness, and this is cold. And men, they're dry. If we think about their penis, it's dry, right? So we are wet and they're dry. So it's this combination of these two, right? Like it's this balance again. There is night and there is day. There is earth, there is the sky. And you know, it just goes like that all the time. So we see the world all the time in these dualisms that they're complementing each other. And they make some mixes and some matches and, you know, things like that. But when there is an imbalance in these ones, then what happened is that our body tends to have disease. So then we need to bring back that balance in that body, in that person, in that soul. So then in that spirit, so then it can, you know, it can have this health. So traditional Mexican medicine is based on this, in hot and in this dualism, and in hot and I mean in cold and warm. So it's like, you know, so for us, when we are, for example, I will put an example that has to be with, you know, with during childbirth. So for us, we understand childbirth as a cold event in our life. So the work of the midwife, the traditional midwife, el rol de la partera, is bring heat to that, right? So then there is going to be balance, because this is, if we give cold to that woman, like here, for example, that they give ice chips and, you know, all those kind of things, it causes an imbalance, And that imbalance, it creates a cascade of problems. So we need to be make sure that this woman, what she is having this baby, she's warm. That's the big part of, you know, the things that the midwife is going to make sure in traditional Mexican midwife friendly tradition, that we want them warm, right? Because if they get too cold, in our perspective, they can die. And then, and this could happen during childbirth, but during postpartum, that is the big thing. So, because we need to make sure that during postpartum, we're going to bring, because this woman was in this cold event that her, all her main canals of energy open to bring, you know, this baby, coldness, it lighted, you know, the air, it came inside her, this cold air. So during postpartum, we need to make sure to remove this coldness from her body. So we're going to keep her warm. We're going to make a nest, a cocoon for her, so she can return to herself, to her warmness again. And in our perspective, for example, a woman that is not well cared during postpartum, because she has this coldness, is when it's going to bring all of these, like postpartum depression, is going to bring problems breastfeeding her baby, is going to bring, you know, all of these things, because there is way too much coldness. And then we need to bring this is the window to bring that heat. So, you know, so just an example so you can understand how we understand all of this. Good. So then, so how the uterus get cold? So I have to start saying that the same way that we understand that everything moves in this dualism, in cold and warm, the same happen with our organs. So our organ, or this organ, or the womb, this organ, but also this energetic point, this part of our body is warm. And when it's cold, then it comes the disease, it's an imbalance. So how the uterus get cold? So most of the time our uterus is gonna get cold through food. So food is medicine for us. So it's not just, you know, a thing that is gonna give fuel to your body and nutrients. And I mean, yes, it's gonna give all of that, but honestly, our food is our medicine, right? Our food is the way that is gonna help to keep that balance in the body. So then if we are eating too much cold stuff, that in our perspective also food is cold and warm and, you know, things like that. So then it's gonna bring this coldness in the body, and then it's gonna cause disease. So for example, if we are eating, if we're having in the morning a lot of cold, like smoothies or iced coffee, you know, like I see here that all over the place, you know, like women drinking like an iced coffee from Starbucks at 7 a.m. I like want to kill myself when I see that, because I'm like, her uterus, right? It's just like that heat that is happening, right? That heat that uterus needs, that we need to continue bringing that heat there. We are basically pouring this ice cold coldness right there. We're, you know, like, yeah, we're going against the nature of this organ. So then emotions. So emotions also, they can be warm and they can be cold. So if we just think about maybe logically an emotion of happiness, if we think about that, well, it maybe because I'm Mexican, maybe for you can be different, but I will say that happiness is warm, right? It's just, it feels good. You feel, you know, your body feels nice. It's this warmness. It's like, you know, like this thing that feels good. You see, it's like this warmness. It's like cozy. But trauma, it's cold, right? So then it's this, the coldness in the body again, right? It's the elide, it's this air, it's like this entity that is right there that we need to remove. We need to make this emotion warm again, right? Another thing that in our perspective brings disease in the womb and it brings coldness in the uterus is this connection with our femininity. So if we are disconnected with this femininity, which, you know, it can be gifted like that, just, you know, it's something that you don't choose, but most likely those persons, they are going to have a cold uterus and they're going to have these problems in our perspective. So this connection with our female lineage too, right? So if we are not connected with our mother, with our grandmother, with all of these, you know, that I just talked, like all of these generation that comes, you know, and we have been due to all kind of things. And right now I'm not gonna, you know, stop on that. But if we have this connection with our female lineage, then also that bring coldness to our uterus. So the big work is restore that, you know, that connection again. Too much cold in the body. You see, like if you are like all the time, you know, like not covering your body, if you don't feel your body, that your body may be cold, but you are not putting a sweatshirt or a rebozo or putting socks or, you know, like those things to keep your body warm. And you're like, I know, I'm just going to be fine. And, you know, like things like that, that also bring, you know, this imbalance, this coldness. This connection with the natural cycles. So again, with the process that we are going through, are we menstruating? When we are menstruating, how are we connected with that? Are we just ignoring it? Are we just putting a Tampax right there or a cup or whatever? We're like, I'm just going to continue my life, like doing the same. Or are we actually, you know, taking the time to this special, amazing time that was gifted to us to go in deep inside us, to rest, to be calm? Are we honoring our pregnancies, and the people around us are also honoring our pregnancies? Are these mothers taken care of? Is this mother resting? Is this mother getting the help that she needs, this pregnant woman, right? You know, like it's everything. It's just all of that is connected. And that also, if this doesn't happen, that also brings coldness. This abandonment of connection with nature, right? Do we understand our natural cycles? Do we go to sleep when it's night, or are we pushing ourselves to be awake? Do we wake up with the sun and we are, you know, like working out in, you know, when there is this daylight, right? Right now, our societies, they don't work anymore like that, right? It's like you have like a night shift. So you have to be awake and just work through the night and then be sleeping during the day. But what happened? At night, there is the moon. And the moon is cold. She's going to bring you cold to your body. You see, so we kind of live in ways that are totally disconnected to nature and our nature and the way we naturally built to function. And that's the reason why we have all these imbalances. And that's the reason why we have all these problems in our uterus, because we are living ways that are not built for our life, that they're not healthy for us and the way that we were built. Or at least that's the way that we understand. So, are we, you know, are we working also with the earth? Are we planting our food? Are we do we have a plant that we take care of, right? Can we take the time to look at the flower blooming? You know, are we going outside for walks? You know, like things like that, as simple, that can really connect us to that, you know, to that nature that we are part of. We are not disconnected. Again, we're just part of it. If we're not doing this, then that caused coldness, imbalance in the womb. And of course, abandonment of this spiritual world. So you know, if we don't have a spiritual practice, and I'm not talking about religion and being religious and going to church or anything like that, I don't do any of that, but I have a spiritual practice, and we acknowledge our own spirit. That's the reason why for me, it was very important right now, before I start sharing all of these, to talk to your spirit, not just to your brain. You see, because for me, you're not just a brain. You're not just a biological thing. For me, you're a spirit right there listening, because I'm sharing my spirit with you. You see, are we acknowledging this when we're interacting with people, when we're serving women, when we're serving other people, when we're with our children, when we're working? Are we doing that? Or we just forget all the time, and we're all the time in the computer and the cell phone and, you know, what's happening? You see? So these disconnections, all of these cause wholeness too, right? We're disconnecting. So what are the symptoms of having a cold uterus? So heavy periods that we have to use like 3 pads, you know, like in a regular day while we're bleeding, that we soak them, you know, in 4 hours or things like that. Irregular periods, it's normal that during the first years, while we are starting menstruating, we have our periods are still in that process of regulate themselves. But if we took good care of our womb at that time, they're going to regulate most of the time, like in the following 2 years or something like that. But if you are 32, 35, 30 something, 20, whatever, and you still having irregular periods, then we're talking that there is, again, this coldness that's still there that enter from all of these things that I mentioned before. And you need to work on that, because that's one of the symptoms of a coldness in the uterus. I don't know if I wrote this like correctly, like uterus fibromas, or we say that in Spanish, fibromas, but I put it there. And then now that I'm reading, I just forget to check how it says that in English, but you know, fibroids, right? Like it's this, you have any of these like growing in your uterus, PCOS, infertility, miscarriages, endometriosis, you know? For me, it has been quite interesting just to find, like, here in Western world, when you read about endometriosis, what all these papers, they say, some of them, they're like, well, now there is like this gene and, you know, all of these. But what is more the common knowledge is like, we don't know what it happens. We don't know how a woman gets endometriosis. It's kind of like a mystery. It's not a mystery. It's coldness. It's coldness because all of this is happening, because we are disconnected from all of this process, because we have trauma, because we are not, you know, we're not living the way that we need to live. Because most of the time, in my case, what I can tell you, someone that has been working with women for 20 years, you know, as that, you know, with those women in Mexico, with women here in the United States, sexual abuse, women with endometriosis. It's just totally related. You need, is that trauma, is that coldness, is that trauma that's still right there that we need to work? We need to take that out, because then it's growing, it's just going right there in the uterus, in that energy or female energy or main energy is just like poisoning right there. You see, it's just like so, you know, so connected for me. It just makes so much sense. Not for everybody, right? I'm not saying this is for everybody, but this is something that I have seen quite often and more, right? So the symptoms of this coldness, and it's basically many things that are happening right there in the uterus. And basically the work that I have to do are, you know, like the people that we do this work and we, from this perspective, is understanding those roots, from where it comes. What are all of those lines? Is the diet, or is only the diet and trauma, or is just the trauma and the disconnection with the female lineage, or is the disconnection with female lineage plus not a spiritual practice plus no connection to nature? You know, it's just like it. So we need to go So it's not something that you learn, honestly, easy. It takes years and years and years to really understand these, to really change your chip in your brain, to start seeing the world this way that I see it. And these were like traditional Mexican doctors, healers, we see the world, you see, because it's just everything is related like that. Okay. So how we are going from having this, you know, like this uterus that has disease to this beautiful garden, to this uterus that is healthy, blooming, that is, you know, that is has this warmness, you see, that allows the growing, that allows the good growing, that allows the good feeling, that allows the heart to be happy, right? How we're gonna do that? So we understand first thing, there is not a quick, easy fix for this. So if you came here, or if you think that I'm gonna tell you, you're gonna take a pill and you're gonna drink these herbs and you're gonna do this and that and everything's gonna be fine, I'm sorry to tell you, the medicine that we practice, it doesn't work that way. It takes time, it takes effort, it takes a lot of, you know, putting yourself to heal and to do a lot of changes in your life to fix this in this way. Of course, there is the option of going to the doctor and they're gonna give you the birth control pill and they're gonna, in 20 years, they're gonna tell you, you know, we need to do a hysterectomy because, you know, for what you want, your uterus right there, this doesn't work and, you know, or I mean, they don't fix anything because you're still very traumatized, because you're still very cold, because you're still not eating correctly, because you still not have a spiritual practice, because you're still not connected to nature, you see? So it's just, you know, what we teach, what we show, what we try to make people understand is that there are other ways to live and that there are other ways to heal not only your body, but your spirit, you see, to really live in this feeling good with yourself, feeling good in your heart, feeling good in your body, you see. We can do that. That was the practice of our ancestors. They were amazing people working to, you know, like I'm all the time, like, you know, thinking, man, why are we still thinking that wellness is just this Western thing? And our people, Mesoamerican people, they were very healthy people. When the Spaniards, they arrived here, they couldn't believe that the expectation of life was higher than them. They have practices of taking care of the body, of their diet, of temazcales, of doing sobadas, of like brushing their teeth. I mean, amazing, amazing things. You see, it was really understanding the body as a temple, as this part that is sacred. You see, that our body is sacred and it needs to be our priority all the time because our body was a gift, you see? It's not just something that you are randomly here. No, you come from a spiritual world. You are a gift to the world, you see? And you are here because you have a purpose and you need to understand that if you want to heal, you see? And it's beautiful when we start understanding this because we say, yes, it's true. You see, our ancestors, they saw this. They knew it. And that's the way they treat their people. We need to remember this. We need to return to this because we need to change the way that we're living because we're in big disease, big time, all the time. This is not that we didn't come to this. So we need to remember. This is very serious. And so there are things that you can do to start this journey if you're looking for an answer, if you're looking for a way to start. And this may look very simple, and again, maybe not be the answer that you were expecting to get from me, but honestly, these simple things are the hardest things. So you need to start a connection with your body. You need to start feeling your body, being aware of your body. It's something in pain. Are you tired? Are you thirsty? what your body needs. Listen to that. You see, your body is giving you that information all the time, but we lost this connection, right? So we need to return, rebuild those bridges. That's the, what the Sovada does too, right? So it just, it brings that back, this in a physical way, someone else helping you to make that connection, like boom, right away, right? But if you don't go to a sobadora, it's okay. You don't need to. You just need to be aware of your body, of your needs, and take care of those needs that your body is telling you that needs. Meditation is a great way to do it. If you feel like, you know, you don't know how to do it, meditation, you can find many things on internet about how to meditate, you know. That could be something that you can start if you don't have this practice. It's really good. Remove all cold food from your diet. So I'm talking seriously. Maybe you don't have to stop eating that ice cream, or maybe you don't have to stop having that smoothie. But if you're going to have any cold food, it needs to be after 12 p.m., once that you already got the sun energy, right? So the first thing that you need to do during the morning, and this is very important if you have a womb, if you're a woman, if you have daughters, listen to this. If you have daughters, don't give them cold food in the morning. We need to learn to feed ourselves correctly, and we need warm food. You can have bone broth, you can have a tea, you can have eggs, you can have anything that is cooked that is warm. You can have a sweet potato baked, you can have oatmeal, you can, you know, just, but no cold, no smoothies, please, no iced coffee, no any of that, no like a cold yogurt, like directly from the fridge, like that's super cold, you see? So it needs to be like warm or at least room temperature. And after 12 p.m., then you can have your cold stuff that you like, but in moderation, right? So maybe if it's really hot outside, maybe if it's the summer and, you know, you're sweating already, you know, things like that. But if you can avoid cold, and this is specifically for women that they have already very painful menstruations, that they're with all PCOAs, that they have fibroids, avoid cold as much as you want. And mostly also during your period. You should not have anything cold, anything, not a single thing of cold food. Bring warm, hot food to your diet as often as you can, right? So again, just make sure this is going to be part of your daily practice, something that you're going to do every day. Wear socks. Most of the time, our hands, they should be warm. And our feet, most of the time, they run cold, a little bit cold. If you feel, right now, just try to think, for example, in my case right now, my feet are cold because I forgot to bring socks. That most of the time I do, but I was late, so I was like, ah, just running. But my feet are covered most of the time. I don't walk like barefoot or like zero, nothing of that, you see? And when you go with the abuelitas, they tell you all the time, the grandmas, no andes así, ponte zapatos. You see, like, don't walk like that. You need to wear socks, you need to wear shoes, you need to llévate un suéter, put a sweater, you know, like, cúbrete la cabeza, you know, like, you need to cover your head, like, things like that. That's, those are all ways. They're not all wives, you know, they're not all things. They're very real things. And it really, that helps to keep that heat, that natural heat that we have in our body. Let me see. And this one, I'm just trying to see. And wear your faja, you know, during moon time. So very important to make sure that, you know, like you keep your warm, warm. But also this is not for everybody, not all the time. But if you feel that you have coldness in your body, really try to start just covering your womb during moon time. You can wear a faja, you can wear a rebozo, you can put like double layer or something right there. You know, it's up to you. It doesn't have to be a faja. We use faja because that's our tradition, right? But you can, you know, like, and start seeing those differences. Start seeing how your body feels with that. How, you know, how this, it feels better and better. Once that you start using the support that gives you, the, you know, how you feel like, it's like a hug right there. And you feel like, I don't know, it's a whole thing, you know, like when you start having this care of your womb and really being aware of what it means and why you have to take care of it, it really changed many things in your life and the awareness that you have in your body and how your uterus, the health of your uterus, it really changed because I have done that in myself. And I can just tell you big, big differences. It's amazing. let me just check. And then some herbs that will support your womb. If you're thinking about drinking teas, if you're thinking about, you know, like what teas are going to help you, you know, to, if you feel like you have a cold uterus, what is going to help you to bring that heat? Cinnamon, that's one of the ones that we drink all the time, right? I love cinnamon tea. And then just, it really brings, it feels just so soothing and, you know, it's really amazing. Ginger, raspberry leaf, jarrow is one of those medicines that we use a lot for women, specifically, you know, during postpartum is one of the herbs that are more used that we give to you know, to a postpartum mom. Rosemary, cacao, thyme, muicle, dandelion, milk thistle, cannabis. Cannabis is a medicine for us. It has been forever a medicine for us. This is a warm, and what I'm saying this, because these herbs, again, because we understand the world like is divided in warm and cold, and some herbs are warm and some herbs are cold. So this, the quality, the spiritual quality, energetical quality of these herbs are warm. So then that means that they are going to help you to bring heat to your body because they are warm herbs for us. And that's it. So this is me with my baby. I'm wearing my faja. She was already 2 months old, I think so. And then and we wear a faja for, you know, during la cuarentena and more, and I still wearing my faja like a lot. But these are, you know, these are were some of the things that I wanted to share today with you. I know we have some time for, you know, some questions and, you know, things like that. And I would like just right now to give you the chance to talk if this is possible, or just we can go over the, you know, like I'm going to stop the share. I would like just to do is just go over like the comments in the beginning and just, you know, from where are you, you know, like joining us. And so it's Seattle, Virginia, I'm from Orange County, New York, okay, Los Angeles. Okay, and there is about the presentation. Okay, good. Okay. So thank you, you know, for your comments, for, you know, like you're mentioning about you feel inspired also for, you know, like this, the passion, I just get very passionate too. So, because I love this and I love women and I love to help. So this is my thing for real. And then that just, I just wanna, you know, inject you with that if I can, because we should love ourselves and love among us too.
I see so many questions in the chat that are really good. Before we get to this, I wanted to just share a story, because I was thinking about everything that you were talking about. And I always think about a midwife that I met in Morelos one time, and she was telling me a birth story, and she was telling me, yeah, I went to this person's house and I checked her. And I was like, what do you mean you check her? Did you give her a vaginal exam? She was like, no, of course not. I touched her hand and she was cold. You cannot give birth when you're cold. Mm-hmm. So I gave her some herbs so she would get warmed up. And so I resonated a lot with what you're talking about. And I was wondering, like, it's just so different to, depending on where you're at. So like, you know, I spent some time in Veracruz last year. It was so hot. Mm-hmm. And then over here where I live in the Pacific Northwest, I feel like it's like the constant struggle with coldness. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if there might be some regions where there is a particular emphasis on like preserving the cold, or if it's just in or seasons, you know, like different seasons, both seasons of life or seasons of the year, where it mm-hmm. might be more important, or if it is always something that you have to pay attention to, because I imagine that if you are in a very hot area in a very hot season, it might be harder to stay away from the cold.
Yeah, no, totally. And it's just like that. It depends pretty much about the region. So again, this is about the balance, right? So we want to make sure that wherever these women needs, it's like what we are going to focus. In my case, I come from the mountains, so I'm come from the cold area. And that's the reason why, you know, for us is bringing this heat to the, you know, to this postpartum, to this mom that was in childbirth. It was just so important, right? And that's most of the time with the midwives that I work, they were from the region, and we're from, you know, like the mountains is more cold, things like that. So that was very specific. But again, this can be applied, this traditional Mexican knowledge and this thing about the balance between the cold and the warm, to any place. So if it's too hot, then because the outside is hot, because the mom is very hot, because, you know, so we're not going to bring cold, but we need to make sure that she is not overheat. So, because definitely for us, like cold is, you can use it in very specific situations, but not during childbirth. It's like something that maybe, you know, you can give maybe like a water that can be a little bit cold, but you're not gonna put a woman in a cold shower, for example, right? So that's something that you are not going to do when a woman is having a baby, or during postpartum, even when it's hot. Like they're not going to take, that's the reason. We're talking also about indigenous communities where sometimes there is no running water. The only way where is, you know, going to shower in the river or taking water from the river. So that's the reason why during la cuarentena, actually the only bath that women get is the temazcal, which is a hot, you know, bath, a hot session. It's, you know, with the steam and, you know, all of this, it's really, again, bringing that heat in the body. But but if there is no hot water, they will not shower the woman or anything like that, right? So, so definitely it changes in regions. And then, and again, in my experience, it was like that because I come from the mountains. So that it's cold. So then we need to just keep this, but it can change. And it, you know, the seasons can be very different, depending on, you know, like the regions and all of this. I know that, in places where there is, when there is a lot of heat, for example, So women, they're not going to be, they can be, for example, with a fan. It's like, you know, and maybe it's this, like these differences that we don't have AC, right? So you're not going to put an AC in a, even if it's hot outside, what you use is a fan, but actually when it's very hot, a fan is just giving, you know, some air, but also it's not, you know, it's not going to cool off your body that much. So again, it's continue having this heat. You just want a little bit of running air, but not really putting cold in the body, even when it's very hot outside. Okay, so I hope this answered the
question. That's a great answer. Isasitlali had her hand up. I don't know if Isasitlali still wants to talk. I see a lot of questions in the chat box. But Isasitlali, if you want to talk, you can unmute yourself.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Yes.
Okay. I was already writing it into the chat box. First of all, thank you, Mestli, for your for sharing your energy. I really appreciate everything you're sharing. I just had two questions. And I don't know if they're too off topic or if they're even to the point, but are there any things like before, during, or after sexual activity that should be avoided to protect the delicate balance of the uterus energy? And do birth control methods create any type of imbalance with the warmth or the you know, with the womb? Mm-hmm. Those were my questions. And also, what are there fruits that are considered? Are they all considered cold? Mm-hmm. I was just wondering that. Mm-hmm. Those are my questions.
Okay, good. Thank you. So sex for us is definitely, it's warm, right? And we can feel like after having sex, most of the time we're sweaty. So so the idea of this is really, there is no like this idea of, again, taking like a cold shower after this or anything like that. It's just letting really the body cool off by itself. Sperm is warm. So basically it needs to be warm to make a baby in our perspective, right? A man that has cold sperms or that has too much coldness is going to cause an imbalance that also can bring infertility in men, same as in women. So the idea is that really just to keep that that same balance. There is nothing. I mean, the body's gonna kind of cool off by itself, and then it shouldn't be any problem related to it. There can be problems with more related to other things that is not cold and warm. Can be, you know, like emotional things, and then it depends of the motion. If the motion is cold or warm, then that can bring an imbalance. So it just gets a little bit more tricky, you see, because it's like all of this about traditional Mexican medicine is very deep and very, you know, it goes very complex in so many layers. But about birth control, I will say, there Barbasco, that it's actually the natural route that big pharma went to indigenous regions in Mexico to learn how, because it's the pill, it comes from that, from that plant. So then this root, and then it's called Barbasco. And then they found out, because that's what, you know, all of these people do. They go to indigenous communities to instill the knowledge, to hacer patentes, to patent that, that and became now knowledge of, you know, all of these corporations. And then, indigenous groups, they have always had ways of using plants for birth control method. And these were related also to the quality of the plant. But right now, we are using these birth control methods that are not natural. They're not, they're not natural. So then what happened is that, yeah, they bring an imbalance, that's for sure. Like, and I'm sorry to say this, and, you know, I'm a feminist, like, big time. But really what we have been doing is just like not helpful in many ways. Actually, we have been disconnecting women from our own bodies and our cycles because we are continue allowing a patriarchal system to, you know, like manipulate. And that's not the way. I mean, we really need to change that if we want our health back. You see, it's not about just make it easy because it doesn't make easy for us. We're not having children, but we're getting sick. Like, what's the point then? You see, it's just like, this is not the way. The way that we're having, you know, like doing all of this, that these societies are working is just like anti-natura. And it's against our nature. And yeah, they bring imbalances. They bring coldness, that's for sure. Because it's something totally synthetic, artificial in the body to manipulate hormones that they're not helpful. So if you can stay away from them, please do. That's the best thing that you can do. Learn to work with your body. Learn to work with your partner. That's what we need to work to. Because this is an equal relationship. That's what we need to work toward. You see, like really having this to understand, to take responsibility of our bodies in that way too. Because we even that has been taken from us. So then we really need to return to that. But they're herbs, and they were these herbs that that were used that right now, you know, they're not used anymore even in those communities. And then but it was about the quality of the herb. So I'm not like, you know, most of the time, and for the women that when we were working, you know, the midwife was working with them, it was more about, you know, taking some really strong herbs, like bitter herbs, because that one's, you know, for the quality that bitter herbs are most of the time cold, but also they will help or will stop, you know, like the pregnancy, or put or overheat the body in a sense that also it will cause, you know, not the continued developing of the fetus, or, you know, so there were always these options. So it was just, or take a very strong rue and cinnamon, you know, like tea. After, you know, if you don't want to get pregnant and you know that you can get pregnant during that time, you know, your ovulation, and then and bring your body a lot of heat. So you kind of basically need to imbalance that, you know, that natural. So then that imbalance is not going to allow the fecundation, you know, of the sperm and the egg. So steams, you know, like there were also some of the things that were used, like very strong steams using bitter herbs and then drinking that too. So that was one kind of some of the recommendations, but honestly, there was not like a specific thing that used as a birth control method. It was more like kind of in those emergencies, and it was more, you know, like part of the work. It was to understand when you get pregnant, when, and you know, like the thing also is that the midwives, traditional midwives, is not just a talk. I mean, they had a very specific role that they can talk also with the partners, you know, and say, hey, during this time, you know, if you, she's going to get pregnant, can you, and they have big talks with them. They like, they los regañan. I mean, like, they're like, you know, saying, can you have it? I mean, can you support another child and your conditions of that? And they're like, no, and they're like, okay, well, so then in that case, don't do that to her, you see, because you're causing a problem. She's going to get sick. And, you know, so they, you know, it's a whole different way. That's the thing, that is a different way. So right now we're very far from that, and we cannot do it exactly the same. We need to find ways to work with that right now in this society that we are at this time. And then, so yes, let me see. So I think that those were the questions. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I see Sorina asked if you take students.
So I do just my workshops. I personally not, I'm in that process of doing that. I'm still don't, I haven't, you know, thought about really how I'm gonna do it. The thing about taking students, like for me, it's like a big commitment because I did that for myself too, you know, when it was my time. And then it's not just like something that is online or things like that. It really built a relationship. So it's just, you know, like there has to be many things for me to take a student or even me feel ready to do it. But right now, the only way that I teach is through my workshops. And that's the best way to get in contact with most of this knowledge. And then what I always suggest is try to find a teacher, a maestra close to you. After you get this knowledge that she's willing to take you as an apprentice. So then, because this takes years and years and years. So it's really, and it does, it's not in books. I mean, some of the information, yes, right now it's in books, but it's not something that you just, you know, just kind of read like a few books. And it really is about being there present. And it's about way of life too. So that is like the other thing. But yeah, that's, right now that's the situation.
Yeah. And then Gabriela asks, what these do you recommend to bring warmth to the womb during pregnancy?
Mm-hmm. So during pregnancy is honestly just warm things. That's the way that you're gonna keep your womb warm, or in case that there is like so we need to know actually if the uterus is cold during pregnancy. One of the things though is that in pregnancy, it's in our logic, the womb cannot be cold, because if the womb is cold, it cannot get pregnant. So actually, if this woman is pregnant, that means that her womb has some warmness to have this, but she may have any other things, right? She may have even the fibroids, or she may have trauma, or you know, all of these things. So there are other ways to do it, but not with herbs. So it's just, you know, you need to, it's more body work. It's more about you know, the food that she's eating. It's more about that way. But I will not say herbs specific, like for bring heat in the to the body, to the womb during pregnancy. It doesn't work that way. That's only when you are not pregnant, or when you want to get pregnant, or during postpartum. But during pregnancy, because the baby also is warm. So you don't want to put a lot of warm right there, because again, that can bring imbalance. And herbs can be very warm too. So that's the reason why you need to treat it in a different way. Mm-hmm.
And then Anna is asking, what foods do you recommend for a partera, midwife, myself, when I am at a long birth supporting, or in the middle of the night at a birth, things to keep my body warm, and types of foods you would recommend?
Cacao. Cacao, one of the best ones that we can use as, you know, birth workers to keep ourselves warm and alert. So you can drink like a cacao with water, like kind of the Mexican style. Them to have, it was having cacao. So then we can make chocolate to drink, and then that will be for her and for me too. So and if you need, you know, like you can have also like the cinnamon tea that also keeps you warm. And then that's a good one too, because it just, you know, it you're gonna feel also very alert. But I will say cacao, that will be the big medicine for you as someone that is supporting. And you can add some sugar if you want, or some like brown sugar, or you can just drink it. what exactly country, but when we drink cacao, cacao has medicine too. Cacao is a very special sacred seed. And it allows us not only to be alert and warm, but actually to get information. So then that was the reason why many midwives, at least the ones that I work with, they will say, you know, you also can drink cacao because that is going to give you, you know, it's going to open something like that, you kind of like an awareness, very specific, to be very present, to see signs when, you know, things are happening right there. So, and I have used it, and it's honestly a great medicine, but we need to start a relationship with cacao too. So again, it's not just about going and buying, it's about starting a relationship with the plants, starting a relationship with the seeds, and really understand that these seeds have a spirit too. So you are calling the spirit of the cacao to help you in whatever you are, you know, in that need that you have to help that woman. So then it's like, you know, it's very sacred thing. And then, but you can start, you know, drinking that and see how it feels. Mm-hmm.
Then I see a question from Maribel that says, how do I start my spiritual practice? Talking to my mom, in parentheses, deceased, or praying, or any ideas?
Yeah, so definitely, you know, a spiritual practice is first sitting with yourself. So it's, you know, you are the main spirit. You are, you know, the creator of your own, you know, you are the main source of that energy. So then it's really about going, you know, in yourself. So I, as I mentioned, meditation is a great way to do it. You know, we have access to meditation, even, you know, YouTube videos, things like that. Most of the time, all of this is done through breathing. So we need to breathe and feel our body. And we breathe in traditional Mexican medicine, not just because, you know, with all of these Western idea of what amazing is to breathe and, you know, all the benefits that it brings, is because we believe that air has a spirit. So when we're breathing, we're bringing the spirit of the air inside us. So we're asking that spirit to help us in what we need, right? So we're bringing that spirit in our lungs, in close to our heart, right? So we're bringing that spirit and we're asking, you know, to help me, to help you, to, you know, like, and then to start guiding you. And then, and really starts like that. So light a candle, we always need an altar, you know, all of these for us having altares, all of these traditional midwifery is about praying, about altares, about candles, about the elements, about copal, about, you know, all of that. And really, you know, about bringing all this energy together. So you can start just putting an altar with whatever things cause you. You should have some water there. You should have a candle, and you should have something that is symbolic for you. Could be a stone, a picture, flowers, you know, spirits say like flowers. Those are the elements, right? Like los elementales, decía una maestra. Entonces, so you can just, you know, like bring those things in your altar, you sit right there, and then you start just breathing, holding that energy of the air to help you, and then feel, and start feeling what your body feels. You see, no thinking, is feeling. Feel your feet, feel your legs, feel your hips, feel your vulva, feel your uterus, feel your abdomen. You know, you start, you know, like step by step, just feeling. And then is when you're going to start getting this information. And it can be very healing, even just doing that. Sometimes we don't need to go to talk to our moms. And, you know, it's good to do that too. Or, you know, like having, I don't know, like fix everything with the partner, or, you know, like, because we cannot do those things all the time. You know, we cannot control people. We need to release that. That's not part of it. This is about personal healing. This is about how we're going to heal ourselves, not how we're going to heal my mom, my brother, my, you know, no, it's about ourselves and the practice, the care that we have with our body and our spirit. We need to center the return to ourselves.
Thank you for that. That's awesome. Then there is another question about fruit. Like, is fruit considered cold too? Anything on cooked, like salads or raw?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's a great question. So some fruits are cold and some are more in the, we don't call them warm, but we call them templadas. That means that they're not cold or warm, but you know, they can be, you know. So most of the time fruits that they have a skin and that you have to peel that skin, they're gonna be cold inside. So whatever you have to peel the skin to eat it, that's cold. But also it depends where they grow. So it gets more complicated. So for example, the ones that are, you know, like on the, they're on the floor, you know, like those vines or things like that, that they, we will say, for example, sandia, right? Like watermelon, that's a big one, cool. I mean, it just, it has that huge skin. It grows on the floor. I mean, it's just like cool. Melons, you know, all of that is very cool. But for example, we can think about a peach, right? That it's right there up, it's growing, it's receiving the light that is warming this fruit, and that you're gonna eat the skin actually. So that one is more templada. An orange, for example, orange are cold, pineapples are cold, you know, like, so all of those are cold, like the ones that you have. So that will be an easy way. Not all of them, there are exceptions on this, but I will say just start with this and see how it feels. So, and then you're gonna feel it, right? You're gonna start feeling that. And again, it's a balance. You know, I know a lot of people, they have for breakfast, like fruit. You can have your fruit, but don't have like a smoothie or like super cold strawberries, blueberries, you know, all those things that they come from your fridge. If they were outside and they were, you know, their room temperature, you can eat them, but with something warm. So then you're gonna balance off that those temperatures. So for example, you're not gonna eat it with yogurt because yogurt is cold, but maybe you can have them with oatmeal, or maybe you can have them with a piece of bread, you know, and I don't know, like, it's just like really about being creative about this and just thinking like that you don't have to give that much cold to your body. But honestly, I would recommend, what I do with my clients is like, no yogurt, not fruit in the morning. I'm sorry. It's like, you wanna get better? You need to have cooked food in the morning every single day. So then, and then they see changes. I mean, they come here like 3 weeks after and they're like, I start feeling different. I'm like, totally. I mean, it's like, it's not magic. It is real thing, you see? But feel your body. You see, that's the most important thing, because your body is the one that it gives you. You know, our ancestors, all these people, they didn't come with the knowledge. It was about really having a deep relationship with the ingredients, with everything, and how it feels, how it feels when I drink water, how it feels when I eat this mushroom, how it feels, you know, and that, because when we're really connected with our body, we can feel those things. It's pretty amazing, but we can. It's just that we are very far from that, but we can build this relationship.
Yeah. We're about to run out of time, but there's still a couple of questions. And one that is interesting is the new trend for good health has been cold water plunges. I also have heard that a lot of people talk about cold showers and the benefits of taking cold showers. Mm-hmm. The questions they have is, as women, should we stay away from these, mm-hmm. or does it just depend where we are in our cycle? Like, mm-hmm. We don't do it during menstruation, mm-hmm. but
it's more like that second part. There is a line of traditional Mexican medicine that is called hydrotherapy, and you know, there of course you don't have like all the modern things that, you know, like they have right here, but you have rivers, you have like waterfalls, you have all of that, and those, they have medicine, and those sometimes the person needs this, right? They need this medicine. So so it depends pretty much for what you wanted. So if you're asking me about, it's my understanding, because I don't know too much about this, but what I understand is that this cold, what it brings is that it helps your immune system. It activates like all of this. I will say take herbs. It will. they have a healthy life, your immune system is going to be great. You don't need cold showers. But, you know, it depends pretty much what's the purpose of that cold thing. And then if there is other ways to treat whatever you want to treat with these cold things. And again, I want to say all of this is from traditional Mexican medicine from a very specific region of the world. You know, like if I say this to maybe someone that comes from all that snow and all, it's just going to be different, right? Because like, so it's just really, you know, there are many ways to understand this world. There are many ways to understand our bodies. And this is just one. Western world is a different one. Chinese is a different one. Ayurvedic is another one. There are many ways, many. Which one is the correct? That this is not about this. This is not about being just right and say this is the best and the perfect. This is the one that I practice. This is the one that comes from my lineage. This is the one that I'm sharing. But it's not, you know, and we need just to think about this and really see what is for us the best, what works the best. And I will say, just follow that.
Mm-hmm. And then, well, one last question. And then we should close it because it is, and like our time is ending and we really appreciate your time, Mesli.
Gracias.
So there, it says, if our male partner smokes cannabis, is it considered too cooling to his body and it kills sperm?
So no, actually cannabis is warm. So what happened is that with men that they smoke way too much weed, they are overheat. So what happened is that they can have infertility for that reason. So cannabis is good. It's a good medicine. But if you overdo it, it can bring way too much heat to the body and then it's going to kill the sperm or it's going to not be helpful, you know, for the sperm is not going to. But yeah, cannabis is warm. So actually, you know, that's the reason why we use cannabis in, you know, like pomadas, you know, things that we put in our body to for the muscles and, you know, because it brings that heat. But everything is about balance, right? So if we are doing way too much with everything, it's also not good. So this is about the balance and just understanding that way. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. I don't know if anybody has any final parting words before we say goodbye, good night.
Muchas gracias, Mesli. It's always such an honor.
Thank you.
It's always such an honor to get to learn from you and to get to witness your passion. And thank you for lighting the fire in many of us, I'm sure. Definitely my heart feels full. The fire in my heart feels fueled. And eres una inspiración completamente. And it's always a pleasure to get to hear you speak. So I can't wait to get to meet you in person.
Thank you, sis. Gracias.
Muchas gracias.
Yeah, and the chat box, same thing. Thank you so much for your energía. So much wonderful and information and lots of gratitude.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.